We're going to learn about what's the perspective of Judaism on Christianity, but a few points need to be made before even starting. This is not going to be a class on the different types of Christianity around the world. I suppose you know much more than me on this. You don't need me to explain this, and you shouldn't need any rabbi to explain this. And second point, this is not going to be a class confronting the New Testament and the Old Testament. Is Christianity true? It's not. This is not the point of this class. Not at all. Even though it is not true, but whatever. This is not the point of this class. The point of this class is to understand how Judaism sees Christianity. That's the whole point. There are actually different opinions, and we're going to explore somehow these opinions, mainly the opinion of the Rambam, but there are other opinions, and we're not going to delve into every single opinion around the world, but we're going to end up in the conclusion trying to understand how Judaism sees Christianity. This is the point of this class, not a class on Christianity. You don't need me for that. Again, go talk to a priest, and actually don't talk to any priests, whatever. It doesn't go. Let's go. First of all, a little bit of text, which actually this class is going to be a little bit different than the other classes I usually give. Today we're going to read. So I suppose you read much better English than me. But anyway, I think it's very important to go into the details. What we're learning right now, it's a translation of the Rambam's text on idolatry. In the Laws of Idolatry, in the first chapter, the Rambam explains very interestingly what idolatry actually means. We're not going to learn the details of idolatry, how it applies to Jews and non-Jews. No. This is not the point. Let's just learn the history of idolatry. What does it mean? So during the time of Enosh, which is the grandson of Adam HaRishon, the first man, grand or great grandson, humanity made a great mistake. And the sages of that generation gave thoughtless advice. They said stupid things to people. Enosh himself, he made the mistake also. The mistake was this. This emphasis is mine. It's not on the Rambam. They said that God created stars fiercely to govern the world. You know, there are constellations over there, stars and everything else. I'm not going to read every single word. I expect you to read the words. I'm just going to stress what I want to stress to understand how Judaism sees idolatry. Again, this is the definition of the Rambam, but as far as I know, every authority in Judaism agrees to this. This is just the story, what's the history of idolatry. Okay, so God created many, many great and amazing creatures around the world, the sun, the moon, and so on. Therefore, it is appropriate to praise them, glorify them, treat them with honor, because they thought this is actually the will of God. If God created such honorable creatures, sun, the moon, and so on, so let's give them honor. This is the proper thing. And furthermore, this is very important. They thought this is actually what God wants from us. Okay. Having conceived this idea, they began to build temples to the stars and offer sacrifices to them. They praised and glorified them and so on. And according to their false conception, they would be fulfilling God's will. Again, as I stressed in the previous slide, they thought this is what God actually wants. He creates great creatures, so let's give honor to these great creatures. This doesn't mean we're going to forget about God. No. He's like, in the words of the Talmud, Elokad Elokaya, the God of gods, the Lord of the lords, and so on. We're not going to forget about him, but let's give honor to the creatures he himself gave honor. How do you know that he gave honor? Because we see them so great, so mighty. So that's God giving honor to these creatures. Let's us give honor to these creatures. That's what people thought. And over here you have the source. Pay attention. This is chapter 1, law number 1. I cut and paste here and there, which is not really important. But this is law number 1. Let's go to law number 2. The Rambam was so ordered. First law, first step of idolatry. Second law, second step of idolatry. After many years, people arose, false prophets who told their nations that God had commanded them to say, worship this star or all the stars, offer its sacrifices. You see the difference? In the previous one, God didn't say anything. Whatever he's sleeping, he's doing whatever he wants to do. We're just giving honor to his creatures that he gave honor to. I'm not going to serve a man, a woman, whatever, a human being. Why not? Because God didn't give his honor to a human being. It's just a human being like me. Why should I serve you? Why should you serve me? Doesn't make any sense. That's law number one. But the great creatures, of course, God gave them honor. I'm going to give them honor. It's just like a king and his ministers. The king is happy when somebody respects the minister of the king, because the minister actually embodies, so to speak, shows the might of the king. That's good. That's okay. That's good. But in the second step, hey, God said something. Of course, he didn't. It's false. It's not true. But the false prophets, they said, God said something. He said to worship the star, or these stars, whatever. Offer sacrifices, put out drinks, offerings, and so on. He informed them, this false prophet, of a form he had devised, like, this is the shape of the star. Look, this bottle, yeah. God wants us to fulfill, to serve this thing, and so on. And told them that this was the image that of that particular star. This image represents that thing that God told me to serve, claiming that it had been revealed to him in a prophetic vision. I saw that. I'm a prophet, and so on. People gathered and bowed down to them, and the false prophet said, this image is source of benefit or harm. It is appropriate to serve it and to fear it. And of course, they came up with different images. If you serve this image, you're going to have a lot of money. If you serve this image, you're going to have a lot of health. Parenthesis, this is not in the Rambam. Of course, this is my humble addition. Beware. Really beware. Because there are perspectives, let's call it like that, in Judaism that really resemble this. If you pour water in this shape, you're going to have a lot of money. If you do this action, you're going to have a lot of health. And if you say these words 5 times a day, you're going to have a lot of money. Beware. It resembles the same thing, pretty much the same thing. Okay, but wait a second. There's a great sage that said this. There's a whole book called Book of Segulis. Sefer HaSegulis. The Chidor wrote it. Chidor is Chaim Yosef David Azulai. We're talking about a huge and great sage. Nobody argues that the Chidor. It's amazing. Now, he wrote a whole book of strange, miraculous medicines and things we can do to accomplish the different things. Yeah, but if the Chidah says it, it's true, because he was a great sage, really. Mystical, whatever, Kabbalistic, call it whatever you want. Yeah, but you know what? It doesn't mean many, many steps. It doesn't mean that every one of those ideas actually applies to every single person. Not at all. And it doesn't mean that it applies to Jews and non-Jews. Not at all. The Chidah didn't write it for non-Jews. Definitely. No. And when he wants to write about non-Jews, he makes it very clear. I'm talking about a non-Jew. As we know, because we learned it in a different class, not for today, that the Chidor, he spoke with a non-Jew and told him to say the Shema twice a day. He actually checked whether he believes in God and the true God and so on. And he told him that. We're talking about the same person. So when he wants to talk about non-Jews, he makes it very clear. This applies to non-Jews. I'm talking to a non-Jew, and so on. Going back, let's beware, and let's be aware that Judaism is not a magic thing. Let's do this, and we're going to have a lot of... No. Judaism is about serving God. That's all. Not more and not less. Not serving my own purposes and my own benefits and myself. Not at all. Serving God. Just God. Okay. Let's go back to the Rambam. So people, these false prophets, they devised different images and different idols and serve this thing in this particular way, and you're going to have this particular benefit and serve the other thing in another particular way, you're going to have another type of benefit and so on. This service will allow you to multiply and prosper, you know, different things, different types of cells. Do this or that, don't do this, and don't do that later. Other disciples appear who declared that a specific star, sphere, angel has spoken to them. Wait a second, there's a different God. A different God spoke to me. This guy says this God spoke to him. To me, a different God spoke, and he told me to do this and that, don't do this and that, and so on. Serve me this way, and so on. Don't do this, don't do that. Thus continues the Rambam. This practice is spread throughout the world. Everybody starting serving different gods. People worshiped images, strange practices. As the years passed, the glorious and awe-inspiring name of God, says the Rambam, was forgotten by the entire population. Nobody talked about God. In the previous law, law number one, we said, Elokad Elokaya, oh yeah, the Lord of Lords. Yeah, there's such a thing. In this second law, forget about it. Who knows about this? We just know whatever our parents, so to speak, this is the end of the law, gave us and told us, this is God, this is good. If you do this, you're going to have a lot of prosperity and so on, whatever, health. That's all they had. The wise among them believed that there was no God other than the stars and spheres, for whose sake and in whose likeness they had made these images. The one for prosperity, the one for health, and the one for whatever a person wanted. The eternal rock, which means the real God, was neither recognized nor known by anyone in the world. Nobody spoke about God, the real one, with the exception of a few individuals, for example, Enoch, Mesushelach, Noach, Shem, Eber, whatever. The world continued until Abraham came up. This is law number two. Summary, what's idolatry? There are basically two steps, two stages. Stage number one, they believed in God, but they thought that God left the power of managing the world, conducting his world, in the hands of stars and constellations and so on. And the second step is, there is no God. There's no such a thing, Chas v'Shalom, God forbid. Rather, there's a star, constellation, that is actually God. Okay, this is the definition of idolatry, and the Rambam continues speaking about details and details of details. You can go and learn that. And that's an interesting learning for non-Jews in general. And that's learning Torah. You're allowed to learn that. You're allowed to learn that. Everybody agrees to this. At least most modern authorities agree. The Divine Code also agrees to this. You can learn the Rambam. No problem. The entire Rambam if you want. Definitely the part of idolatry. What about Christianity? Where does it fit in all of this? Okay. Let's see what the Rambam says. If we're learning Rambam, let's not forget, and this is going to be important for later, the Rambam lived in Spain, then he moved to Egypt and so on, to a Muslim world. But he lived in Spain. He knew very well what Christianity was, Catholicism in his time. So the Rambam says clearly in many places, this is just a few places, that Christianity is idolatry. Definitely. No doubt about it. He doesn't even have a different opinion or maybe nothing. He says it clearly. And you have all here two sources that he basically says the same thing. The Christians are idolaters. And their festive day is Sunday, first day of the week. Why does the Rambam say this? Because actually he took it from the Talmud, from the Gemara. The Talmud discusses, here's the source, Talmud discusses what can we, Jews, do with idolaters, or what can we not do with idolaters when their holidays are coming. What's the problem? Of course, the text is over here. I'll explain the text in a second. What's the problem? If you do business with an idolater, what does he do, or she, whatever? He, she goes and praises his, her God. Baruch Hashem, I made a lot of money today. I went to the fair and I sold this and I sold that, and he goes back to his God and he's happy about it. And he thanks his God. So we, Jews, so to speak, by doing business with them, what are we accomplishing? That the name of idolatry is praised. So let's not do business with them. Now, everybody agrees that in the day of their holiday, we don't do business with them, because definitely that's the day he is expecting his God to help him make a lot of money. and you made business with them, you gave them money, okay, you bought something, so he gave you something also, but of course he wants money, that's why he sells whatever he sells, and he's going to praise his God. So in the day of his holiday, idolatric whatever holiday, don't do business with them. Question is, what's before, and what happens before and after? So the Talmud says clearly, Rabbi Shmuel says, 3 days before and 3 days after, of course, their holiday, it is forbidden to do business with them. Now, Rabbi Shmuel is from the time of the Mishnah. We're talking around 2,000 years ago, more or less. Rav Tachalipa Bar Avimi said in the name of Shmuel, this is not Mishnah, this is Gemara, that means complete Talmud, whatever, around 1,500 years ago, around the time, Shmuel says, Christians, talking about Christians, not other types of idolatry, are always forbidden. Why is it always forbidden to do business with them? Very simple. Sunday is their holiday. 3 days before Sunday, you cannot do business, according to Rabbi Shmuel. 3 days before you cannot do business. 3 days after, you cannot do business. So wait a second, the week has only 7 days. So on Sunday, you cannot do business. 3 days before, not. 3 days after, not. That's it. You can never do business with a Christian. Why? Because it's idolatry. When you do business with them, they're going to praise their God, whatever that means, and you're bringing idolatry into the world. So don't do business with Christian. It's idolatry. This is the source, commentaries of the Rambam bring that this is the source of the Rambam's idea. Christianity is idolatry, and their festive day again is Sunday. Their holiday is Sunday. That's it. You cannot do idolatry with them. Business with them. You cannot do business with them. This is the idea and the opinion of the Rambam. Now, let's move a little bit deeper within the opinion of the Rambam. How does really idolatry work? And with this idea, I'm going back on purpose. I just want to show you something very quick, which was very small over here. I know it's small. You can look it up. It's very interesting. This idea that I'm sharing right now in a minute comes from a magazine, which was called Tchumin. I think it's, even today you can find it, Tchumin. This is from 2002. This magazine was actually checked by great, great sages in Eretz Israel. So their articles were like respected, very, very respected. That doesn't mean that everybody agrees to what it says over there, but it's a modern magazine, a religious, Jewish religious magazine. And this is where I'm basing the idea that I'm sharing right now. Let's move on. Okay, over here. We said that the Rambam considers Christianity idolatry. All right, let's analyze. Without going into all the details, the magazine has a pretty long article on this, so I'm just cutting the main parts of it. Let's analyze, according to the Rambam, how does idolatry really work? We know the story of idolatry, forgetting about God, serving other gods, and we can apply that to many aspects of our modern life also, like soccer for some people is idolatry, musicians for some people is idolatry, okay, whatever. But besides that idea, let's go a little bit deeper into the actions itself. What defines that something is idolatry according to the Rambam? So first of all, 2 points, this one and this one, 2 points. Point number one, there's something else but God. Of course, we know it's not true, but this is what idolatry actually means. There's something else. Call it whatever you want to call it. Call it a star, call it constellation, call it a musician, I don't care. Call it whatever you want. There's something else. A person considers that there's something else you could praise. There's something else that has power, whatever power it has. It doesn't really matter if it's complete power or if it's not complete power. And it doesn't really matter whether this other thing, we call it other thing, something else, is the only God or not. It doesn't really matter. Even if a person considers that there's a, like we learned in the first law of the Rambam, Elokad Elokaya, the Lord of Lords, even if you consider God like the Lord of Lords, but there are other lords that also manage something and do something, even if you think like that, but there's something else. All right, there's something else. Second point, there's an action. In Torah, in every single law of the Torah, in order to say that somebody can could be punished because of doing such and such action, there has to be an action. If there's no action, there's no punishment. There's no punishment. We can argue what happens with the words when a person talks. Okay, for many, many realms in Torah, words are like actions. Not for everything, but in many aspects of Torah, words are like actions. And therefore, when there's a word, for instance, if a person curses somebody else, there's a punishment. You can't curse God. That's blasphemy. You can't curse God. But I didn't do anything. I just sat in my chair and I said, curse be blah, blah, blah. You cannot do that. But I didn't do anything. Yeah. But in that sense, words are like action. So by analyzing the ideas of the Rambam, comes up that for him, according to him, idolatry has these two components. Component number one, there's something else but God. Maybe with God. Okay, doesn't matter. Like the first law or the second law in the Rambam. And second point is there's an action over here. So you're doing something. If you look at Christianity, if you look at particularly Catholicism, I would say even today, you have both components. Definitely, there's something else besides God, either his son, his cousin, his father, mother, call it whatever you want. I don't care. But there's something else. They even say there's three, at least some of them, not all of them. That's why I said before, this is not going to be a class on all the schools of Christianity. It would be impossible for me. There are so many different types of Christianity. I don't know all of them, and I don't care. I don't want to know them. But the point over here is, definitely all of them think there's something else. Even those who say the Father, you know, the Lord of the Lords, there's something else. So component number one, definitely in Christianity, is found. In Catholicism, is found. What about component number two? There's an action over here. In Catholicism, definitely there's action. The hardest one, the most significant one, is what they call sacraments, whatever. There are different types. And again, this is not a class on Christianity, but I suppose you know what I'm talking about. Eucharistism, and they eat the body of this guy and they drink the blood of the guy. Oy veis mi. There's an action over here. Besides the fact that, of course, nobody's eating any body, like flesh, and nobody's drinking any blood. Yeah, it's wine, come on. And it's a piece of bread, come on. Yeah, I know. But this is an action that strongly represents something. Everybody knows this in the Christian world. It represents something. And for them, it's important. I don't care, but for them, it's important. Therefore, you have both components. In Catholicism, definitely both components. They believe there's something else, and they do something. Or they throw the water on top of the guy, or whatever. Okay, so we can definitely say, and pay attention to this, according to the Rambam, Catholicism, I didn't say Christianity, I said Catholicism is idolatry. Definitely. According to the Rambam, of course, and this is what he knew. He lived around this. He smelled it. He saw it. He knew what he was talking about. Definitely idolatry. No doubt about it. And pay attention. I'm not even talking about images. Yes, some Christians have images. Some Christians don't have images. Yeah, Catholicism is full of images. I don't care. That's not the problem. Pay attention. That's not the problem. Of course, images are not good. Judaism says there's no images of God. We don't have images of things or anything. Yeah, but you have the pictures of the Rebbe beside you. Yeah, I know that. I don't serve the Rebbe. I don't pray to an image. I don't ask this thing, this picture, anything. It just represents for me, my leader, my ideal rabbi, or whatever you want to call it. It doesn't represent God. No at all. Not at all. And if you're going to pray to the Rebbe, that's it. You're done. That's idolatry. It's wrong. Therefore, according to the Rambam, we can understand him much better now. Why? Because Catholicism, I stress this word again, is idolatry. Definitely. And that's what he says. That's what he knew. That's what Christianity meant for everybody around the time of the Rambam and for many years. But then it doesn't end up there. Everybody knows there's a reform. Luther or Martin Luther, whatever you want to call it, he came with new ideas. And again, this is not a class on Christianity, so I don't care about what his ideas were, but definitely the Christian world today is not exactly the same as the Christian world in the times of the Rambam. Definitely not. So we can say, and we can be okay with the Rambam saying Christianity is idolatry, but not necessarily, we have to be very careful with this, not necessarily we can apply that idea of the Rambam to today's most common Christianity. You want to apply to Catholicism? Okay, I agree to that, because the Rambam knew what he was talking about, and we can see that, and you have action, and you have these two components over here, think about something, and so on. But what about evangelic churches and the general, in very, very general, the reform? Not necessarily you can call it idolatry. No, not necessarily. Mainly, that's why I stress these two components, because they don't have the second component. Mainly. They have the first one, because they still think there's something else, definitely. There's this guy and so on. But not all of them have action. If you find one of the schools of Christianity, I'm not talking about Catholicism anymore, that's out of the picture. That's idolatry, we explained that before. Let's talk about the rest. If you find that they have actions, they do things, they bow or they, okay, so we have a problem over here. This is idolatry, because the second component is also met, sort of thing. But if they don't have any of this, even if they have images, I know this sounds very strange, but even if they have images, if they don't pray to the image, just like I have a picture of the Rebbe or whatever other rabbi you want to have a picture of, that's not called idolatry. No, it might be kind of weird, but it's not called idolatry because you don't pray to that. It just represents some ideal or some whatever. Now, that's where we go to the second step, which is called in Hebrew, shituf. Shituf literally means partnership, society, something like that. Partnership, maybe that's a better word. Shituf means that a person considers this would be the first law in the Rambam. A person considers that God is the Lord of the Lords, Elokei Elokei, but there is something else. And God left some power to that thing. And you could pray to the thing, and you can pray to God with this thing, through this thing, and so on. That's called shituf. Now the question is shituf allowed or forbidden? And we're going to analyze this in a second. But first of all, there are, in Hasidic thought, the Rebbe brings this in many places, we hold that shituf is allowed, even though it sounds strange. For non-Jews, I'm talking about non-Jews. For Jews, it's completely forbidden, as we're going to learn in a minute. For Jews, it's completely forbidden. But for non-Jews, the way Hasidic thought works and holds is allowed. What am I saying with this? What's the idea? The idea is like this. I'll give you a very, very brief example of something else, and then we're going to go back to shituf. There are basically two opinions around the sages of the Jewish people. I didn't even write about this because it's not the main thing of the class. What's the world to come? What is it going to be, the world to come? If you ask the Rambam Maimonides, if you ask him, the world to come, that like the ultimate stage of the world to come, it's a spiritual world, completely spiritual. The physical world we know, forget it, it's not going to exist. The body as we know it is not going to exist anymore. Everybody is going to resurrect, because resurrection of the dead is one of the main things in Judaism. But after all, everybody is going to die, and the world is going to be a spiritual thing, and God is going to be revealed to this, he calls them sichlim nivdalim, to separate intellects, whatever that means, like angels, I don't know. This is what the Rambam holds, spiritual end, so to speak. The Ramban, Nachmanides, 150 years after the Rambam in Spain also, he holds completely different. He says, now wait a second. the final purpose of the whole creation is a physical world. God revealed in this physical world. Of course, the body is going to live in a miraculous way. It's not going to die. It's not going to be exactly the same body we have today. I mean, we're going to look the same we look today, but it's going to work differently. Don't ask me how. This is whatever, Moshiach and miracles, and God can do whatever he wants. But the main discussion over here between the Rambam, argument between the Rambam and the Ramban, Nachmanides, is whether it's going to be spiritual world or physical world. Rambam, Maimonides says spiritual. Ramban, Nachmanides says a physical world. All right. How do we hold? What does that mean, we? When I say we, I mean Hasidus. And it's brought down in so many places. How does Hasidus hold? Like the Ramban, Nachmanides. Not like the Rambam on this one. We love the Rambam, but on this one, we don't hold like him. It's a physical thing, and Ramban brings proofs. It's an interesting thing to learn in itself. It's not the point right now. The book he talks about this is called Toiras HaAdam. Shara Gmul. Toiras HaAdam means like what's the laws of a man. He goes through many, many details of human beings. I mean, the laws, he's not talking about non-Jews at all. He talks about Jews. And Shara Gmul means how is going to be the reward God is going to give us. Okay, whatever. He explains all of this and he brings proofs to this. It's interesting in itself. So we do see, why did I bring this example? We do see that Hasidus has a specific way of holding. We hold this opinion on this, that opinion on that, this way, we think this way, that way, with whatever proofs we can provide. It doesn't really matter right now. But we do hold in specific ways. Coming back to Shitu. As we're going to learn in a minute, in the next slide, there are opinions regarding Shitu. Can the non-Jews associate God with something else? Yes or no? So there are opinions. One says yes, one says no. Very simple. So how do we hold? We hold yes. They could do that. But it doesn't mean that it's a good thing. It doesn't mean that God is happy that he is being put in partnership in society, whatever, with somebody else or with something else. According to this, might make more sense to hold, that Hasidus would hold, that Shituf, society, partnership, it's forbidden. Makes more sense. Like, let's just serve God. Why would it be allowed? So over here, I brought down, I explained this in different classes also, but I thought it was important to put it in one place to talk about Christianity. Why would it be allowed, Shituf? What's the point behind it? So this text that I'm not going to read inside, you can read it by yourself. This text explains this idea. And I'm just going to explain it very briefly. Non-Jews receive godly energy. Everything that exists in the world is because God creates it. Non-Jews receive godly energy through a different channel than the Jews receive godly energy. Even though we all share the same physical world, but the channel is different. Why? Because their souls are different. And this is not a class on the details of what a soul of a non-Jew is. I'm not going to delve into that. There are other classes for that. Now, the letter of the Rebbe, very famous letter, and it actually in the channel, in the YouTube channel, is found over there. You can learn the letter of the Rebbe inside, and the sources the Rebbe brings over there. Okay, that's a different thing. The point is that they receive godly energy through a different channel. And since that channel goes through specific angels, very specific angels, therefore they could give honor to those angels. Because after all, they receive godly energy through those angels. Jewish people receive godly energy through a different channel, so to speak. That's why they have completely forbidden the idea of Shitu. Why would you associate God with something else? That doesn't make any sense. God is giving you directly, to the Jew, directly energy. But the non-Jew receives energy through other channels. So they could, up to a certain point, give honor to those channels. The Rebbe brings, this is the second paragraph. What I just said is the first paragraph. Second paragraph, the Rebbe brings a very interesting idea. that even though that it's true, and again, Hasidus does hold that non-Jews could do shituf. And this would include, I'm going back in this for just for a second, this would include many shapes and ways of the Reform Church, so to speak, not Catholicism, that we end up saying that's idolatry. But other types, they do shituf. What's the problem? They associate God with something else, but they don't do actions. Again, I repeat this, if there's an action, that's a different story that goes back to Catholicism. That's idolatry, forget it, wrong. But if there's no action, they just pray, it's okay. It wouldn't be a problem, it's shituf. It's associating God with something else. The Rebbe brings that even though that's true, and we do hold like that, the non-Jews could do shituf. However, definitely, God doesn't like this. And why does he allow something he doesn't like? In order, I know this sounds so strange, but this is the only way I understand what the Rebbe writes. Maybe there's other ways. This is how I understand it. Because God wants to, so to speak, pick and choose which non-Jews are really for him and with him. Those non-Jews that serve him, God, true God, through other channels, so to speak, associating God with something else, they're going to be punished for that. Because that God doesn't like it. I gave you, says God, so to speak, I gave you the opportunity to serve me, to talk to me, and you chose to call my minister. Okay, you know what? It's not forbidden. It's not forbidden, but I don't like it. Having given the opportunity talking to the king of all kings and so on, why do you call a minister? Come on. Even though the minister can give you great advantages. There's a whole very interesting Hasidic discourse on this particular subject of talking to the minister, talking to God and so on, a very long one, 1971, the Rebbe spoke about this. It's in Hebrew, say kedai. It's good to learn, even though it's not talking about non-Jews, it's talking about Jews. But it's interesting. It's an interesting Hasidic discourse to learn. Coming back to the point that I'm trying to make, the Rebbe says clearly, and he brings a Rashi to prove his idea. And Rashi says, I'm going to read this. He, God, did not prevent them, the nations, from erring after them, the constellations and so on, but rather led them astray. Look at these words. This is Rashi. Over here you have the source. God led them astray with empty words, like serving other gods, to remove them from the world. To remove whom from the world? Those non-Jews that serve God through different things. It's a hard thing, I know. But this is what Rashi says, and this is what the Rebbe understands in Rashi. And this is how I understand the Rebbe understanding Rashi. Does God want to be served with shituf? No. Does God punish in this world a non-Jew that serves him, God, with shituf? No. Does God punish a Jew that serves God with shituf? Yes, he punishes. Definitely. It's forbidden for a Jew. It's not forbidden for a non-Jew. Now, let's move on. Where are the opinions, or who are the opinions that say that shituf is allowed or is not allowed? The most famous, brought down in many places, in Hasidus also, the most famous opinion that says that shituf is allowed is Ramo. Reb Moshe Serles, he wrote down the notes for the Ashkenazic world to the Shulchan Aruch, to the Code of Jewish Law. And he says clearly that non-Jews are allowed to do shituf. Yes. Now, this text, we're going to read it together. There are others, in plural, opinions that don't agree with the Ramo. Ramo is Reb Moshe Serles. They don't agree with him. Why? Over here you have the source. You can look it up. It's very interesting in itself. It's a hard source. It's not an easy source. But whatever. When the Ramo says, let's read it. Let's read it. It's going to be easier. There are those who are permissible with partnership, partnership with idolaters. I'm going to explain these three words. Partnership with idolaters. The Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Jewish Law, discusses whether a Jew can partner in business. I'm talking about business with a non-Jew. Yes or no? Why not? Why yes? Because you want to do business, whatever, you want to make money. Why not? Because there might be a problem. You owe me. I don't owe you. Yes, no, let's go to the judge. So you go to the judge, and the non-Jew ends up swearing in the name of his God that he didn't do anything wrong. Whatever. He says he's right. I say I'm right. Whatever. Somebody's wrong, of course, but we don't know who's lying. Maybe the Jew is lying. Who knows? So the non-Jew comes and swears in the name of his God. So me, like the Jew, who was a partner, he made a non-Jew swear in the name of a different God. It's a problem. Don't do that. So don't make partnership with a non-Jew, and that's it. You're going to be fine. You're not going to cause this guy to swear. So let's go again to the text. There are those who are permissible, it's allowed, to partnership with a non-Jew because they don't swear on their idols, etc. That's etc. It's in the text itself. Rather, they associate the name of heaven, that would be the Lord of Lords, the true God, with something else. So one thing is to say, there's no such thing as God. I don't care. The cup is God. Okay, I want to swear in the name of the cup that, no. Wait a second, that's idolatry. Forget it. No. But if you say there is a Lord, and he's the Father, and he's very far from here, and I'm going to swear in the name of the Father, the Son, the daughter, the granddaughter, hey, what are you doing? Yeah, I'm recognizing the Father. He's over there. But there's something else. He's busy. The Father is busy. So I'm going to swear in the name of the Father and something else. And we don't find here the problem of in front of the blind, don't put a stumble stone, so to speak. That's not a problem, says this authority. We'll see in a second who this is. This is wrong. It's not Deyas. It should be an H over here. Yoyle Deya. This letter is wrong. Okay. Because they're not warned against association. Again, since the non-Jew is not warned, is not forbidden to associate God with something else, when the non-Jew swears in the name of God and something else, it's not a problem. So you can be lenient and you can allow a Jew to associate in business with a non-Jew. It's not a problem. Even if the non-Jew ends up swearing because there was a problem over here, who owes what to whom, that's not a problem. Not a problem. That's opinion number one. Now, this is the Ramo, of course. It's allowed. That's what Ramo says over here in this place. Look at the response on Noide Yehuda. This is the Pischei Tshuva writing. Look at the Noide Yehuda. Yeredea, this is right. This one is wrong. Yeredea, end of chapter, whatever, 148. That he expands on that people say that the non-Jews are not warned against Shitu. So the Yonayde Yehuda, his writing, Yehuda Landau, that's what was his name. His writing, people say that the non-Jews are allowed to do shituf. It is a mistake, he writes. It is a mistake to say such a thing. Taken from the language of the Ramo, mentioned. Like, the Yonayde Yehuda is talking about what the Ramo writes. And people say, from the language of the Ramo, that you can do shituf. The non-Jews can do shituf. I don't agree to that at all. And in truth, the intention of the Ramo is that he associates when swearing is that it doesn't say my God. That means it's in on purpose in a small letter. It's not God with a capital letter, on purpose. And this should be my God. Here's my Spanish mixing into the English. Okay, so the Noide Beyud is explaining. When the Ramo is talking about allowing a non-Jew to swear in the name of something and God is because the non-Jew doesn't say, this is exclusively my God. No, he's just associating. He only mentions it together with the name of God. So the Ramo says, that's not a problem. They're allowed to do that, to associate the name of God with something else. However, there is a prohibition for Jews to do this, definitely. But the non-Jews are not warned against that. That's what the Ramo is talking about, swearing in the name of something else and God. However, continues the Noide Yehuda, when he, the non-Jew, serves idolatry in a way of shituf, there is no difference at all between Jews and non-Jew. Of course it's forbidden. That's Tenoi de Yehuda. And then he mentions, I put this in Hebrew because it didn't make any sense to translate this. He mentions other places around Torah, other great rabbis that agree to him. So what comes up from the Tenoi de Yehuda? That even though the Ramah says shituf is allowed, he's not talking about serving God with shituf. No, he's just talking about swearing. In the case of swearing, a non-Jew could associate the name of God with something else. A Jew cannot, but a non-Jew could do that. But when it comes to the service of God, like swearing, why would you swear in the particular case that we're talking about? Because there's a problem in business over here. You say, I stole, I didn't steal, whatever. I owe you, I don't owe you. So let's swear and let's solve this by swearing. We're both religious people. You believe, I believe. So let's swear by God. So the Jew swears in the name of his God, and then the Jew swears, in the name of his God with something else. The Ramah says, it's okay. No problem. But if you're talking about serving God, bowing to something, or praying to something, and so on, the Tenoi de Yehuda says that's completely forbidden for Jews and for non-Jews. And he bases himself in other places also, in his times, before his times, and so on. However, he continues, you can't say this in the opinion of the Ramah. So he agrees that the Ramah, after all, says shituf is allowed for non-Jews, not just for swearing, but also for serving God. There's a large Lord of Lords, and whatever, there's the son and the daughter and whatever else you want to say. So we see that there are basically two opinions regarding Shituf, the opinion of the Ramah and the opinion of other sages. Tenoi de Yehuda is one of them, Sha'ar Ephraim, whatever, there are others that forbid this. Having said all of this, let's go back a second and then we move on. Chassidus clearly holds that it is not liked by God. He doesn't enjoy this. So what comes up out of all of this? Let's summarize everything. Christianity, according to the Rambam, it's idolatry. Point. Nothing to do about it. It's forbidden. It's one of the seven commandments that non-Jews have to keep. But we have to be very clear that the Rambam was talking about Catholicism, as he knew it, and probably changed a little bit throughout time. I don't know, and I don't care, but he's talking about that, where there's action to it. Not just thinking and believing, there's action to it. Forget it, that's idolatry, out. That's what the Rambam holds. The Rambam doesn't talk about shituf in this particular case of non-Jews, but even if we say Catholicism or the Reform with all its colors and shapes and so on until today, it's not really idolatry. That's only shituf, association, okay? The Ramah will tell you it's okay. However, Hasidus will tell you, yeah, but God doesn't like it. Even though the Ramah says okay, God doesn't like it. Either you hold like this or you hold it is completely forbidden. So it's just different paths. If you want to talk about Catholicism, forget it. The Rambam says it's idolatry, and he knew what he was talking about. And we explained. There's belief and there's action. Gone. Forbidden. And if you want to say it's not idolatry because the Reform and so on, okay, it's shituf. One opinion is going to tell you, I don't care if it's shituf, it's forbidden anyway. And a different opinion will tell you, yeah, it's allowed. Ramon, it's allowed, but God doesn't like it. So at the end of the game, don't do it. It's not good. It's not what God is expecting of any human being to serve him, definitely. So these would be the different ideas and the different perspectives, how to understand the view of Christianity, I'm sorry, of Judaism on Christianity. What does Judaism hold Christianity actually is? How does it work? And how do we put it? In which category we put it? Is it idolatry? Is it shituf? And even if it's shituf, does God like it? The answer is no. God doesn't like it.